Ms. John from Lakeside.
John, alcoholic. So what does 13 plus 45 make? 58?
Okay.
I will. My sobriety date's 1/1/91, which was my last drink was New Year's Eve. Wasn't my last drunk, and we'll get to that later. Yeah. So the way this is going to work is, if this story isn't very interesting, I have a joke, and you guys got to let me know through the story, okay? Well, you guys let me know. Yeah. Okay. So I grew up in a house. My dad drank a lot, and there was a lot of long, long nights where my mom and him would just go at it all night long. And for me, it was pure misery. And so what I learned out of that for myself was to not be noticed. And I did that very, very well. My three brothers wanted my father's attention, my mom's and my father's attention. And they tried really hard. And I'll get to them later, too. And the way I know I was very well at not being noticed, my grade point average in high school was 2.1, which is no... And I never got an A, and I never got an F. Because F's got noticed in a negative way, and A's got noticed because, oh, you're a good guy, you know, or whatever. And I didn't want any of that. So I did that. I did very well. I did very well with being not noticed. The other part was, because my dad was a drunk, I didn't want to be like my dad. I didn't like the way he acted, and my mom acted in relationship to him with that. And my mom probably should have drank too, but she never did. So I didn't drink until later. My brothers, I'm the oldest son, and so I always got singled out as, why can't you always act like Johnny, to my three younger brothers. And for me, that was, even trying not to get noticed, I got noticed anyway. And it's the kind of notice that I didn't want. So my brothers, they started, like everybody's story in here that I hear a lot, not everybody's of course, but I hear a lot, they start drinking when they're 8, 12, you know, 16. The guy last week got sober at 15. So, I mean, it's just amazing. So what happened for me was somewhere after I was 21, I started dating this woman, and she was a hippie. And she liked to smoke a lot of pot. So I did a little bit of that for a few times. But I remembered well the first drink. And it was January 27th, 1974. And I was 22 years old in a week. And my friend was 21. So we went to JJ's. If anybody remembers that place. Yep. And I had a few drinks. And it was like, oh. Why? I just kept thinking, why did I fight this for so long? And it was exactly what I wanted, exactly what I needed. I felt at home. And I did not get, like, drunk. You know, I didn't get real drunk. I just had a few drinks. And then this woman, we went to her house, and she's a hippie chick. She's older, divorced, with kids, and I was very young and very naive because I stayed out of everybody's way. I didn't want to be noticed. So I didn't really do anything. And in her house, she had the beads on the bedroom door. She had the fish tanks in the bedroom with the bubbles. It was just really nice. And the only thing I can say is that she did me that night. And that was the first time for that, too. And so that whole night was just unbelievably good. So I kept thinking, wow, I fought this? This is crazy. So I remember that day. I remember that day very, very well. I also remember the last day of my drunk, which is well, we'll get to that, but wasn't the same as my sobriety date. A lot of stuff that's in between, I don't remember. I remember a lot of stuff that's in between, but the timeline gets all jumbled. So when I tell my story, I'm probably, if anyone's paying attention close, you might notice that I'm jumping all around. Well, to me, it's the timeline I got. So, so what happened after that night was, it wasn't very long. I mean, probably not even a month, 2 months. I was already blacking out. I should have probably been drinking when I was 12, whatever. And I was blacking out already. And for me, I liked it. I didn't like the nights when I blacked out. Because that's usually the nights I did the things to people that when I found out what happened caused great amounts of shame for me. Go through a lot of shame going through the blackouts and the way I treat people when I'm that way. But then about June of 74, my brother, who was 20 at the time, and this is where my, you know, a lot of times the stories we hear are very entertaining and they're fun and funny, and some of my story isn't so fun and not so funny. Even when I try to put a spin on it, it's not funny. When he was 20, he was a Reds and wine drinker. He took Reds and drank wine. And he... And he shot himself and killed himself when he was 20 years old. And I just went, huh, that's weird. I wonder why he would do that. And then within a couple of days, I'm blacked out again. So that's for me, that's all these things that happened, I still kept drinking anyway. Because by now, I'm fully involved, fully hooked. And so somewhere around the mid-70s, you know, actually, okay, 76. See, I do remember some parts. This is good. I was 26 years old, and I went to school at Sacramento State, and I lived in the dorms. And what's in the dorms is a lot of 18-year-old girls who have never left home before. A lot of trouble for me. And here's the deal. I'll say the part I'll share about women is that I always wanted to go out with women. I was afraid to talk to them. When I drank, I could talk to them. And there was always women that I was chasing. I would do a lot of chasing. And when they finally gave in and went out with me, all of a sudden that night, that particular night, I would pick for the drink to be more important. And I would just get so drunk that I didn't really care anymore. And then black out and wake up the next day and find out what happened and be full of shame. Shame-based. Hated myself. And I'll do that. So those were, that's a lot of that. A lot of that kind of stuff at the dorm and all these young people. I was 26. And I was younger than some of them. Because I still, you know, I never grew up when I was growing up because I didn't want to be seen. And when I was drinking, you know, I never grew up. Didn't grow. So I, when I got back to San Diego, started doing a lot of outside issues with the marijuana part. And when I remember one night, I woke up out of a blackout, and the first thing I'd see was my hands on the steering wheel. Oh, someone else has done that before? And so it's that thing of slowly waking up and going, oh, crap, I'm driving. Okay. How fast am I going? I'm doing 40. So where am I? Oh, I'm on the freeway. You got to speed up. Just little by little. It seems like it took like an hour to do this. Okay, stay in between the lines. Speed up to 60. Okay, where am I going? Oh, I'm going home. Good, good. Oh, excellent. That's where I'm headed. Where did I just come from? And now, you know, vision's getting a little wider and everything. Where did I just come from? Oh, shit. Sorry. And I looked on the seat next to me, and I had a brown paper bag with 9 kilos of pot in it. Yeah. And I'm driving around in a blackout with a 30-year sentence next to me. And right now, that would be about 30 years about right now. So that's the stuff. That's where drinking took me. Took me to doing all kinds of things, hurting people, hurting myself, going out and being, I don't know what, just being stupid. So then in the 1980s, when I got my drunk driving And a guy a couple weeks ago shared about how one of his friends went and got a drunk driver and went to that drinking driver school and then found out that he thinks that he thought, his friend thought that everybody was an alcoholic. Well, that was me. I was the one who went to this drinking driver class, and everything they told us, I do that. That 20 questions was 13 yeses at that time. I was still only, I don't think I was 30 yet. And so what that did for me is I got depressed. Damn, I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know what it meant. It just sounded bad. So I went on a... I really didn't know what that meant then. So I went on one of those 90 days where I didn't drink. I went 90 days. It was from October. And then New Year's Eve, walked across the street. Now here's another bar everyone's going to remember. Maybe. Some of the older folks. The Park Place in El Cajon. And it was New Year's Eve, and I got really, really, really drunk. So that's how I'd go 90 days. Let's go have a couple drinks. Bam, blackout. So that's my drinking. And then just a lot of little stories like that. So what happened in the last few years of my drinking was this. You know, when we read chapter 3, and I really like the fact that we do that here. We read chapter 3 in the book, and it talks about us trying to do different things to try to control our drinking. And that's what I was doing the last few years. I would switch drinks. And one of them was going to Kahlua. Drink Kahlua. You can't get drunk on Kahlua. Well, if you drink 2 liters, you get drunk. 2 liters of Kahlua will do the trick. And that's the other thing about my story too is that if there's a substance out there or an action or a behavior that we can become addicted to, that's me. And so for me, what the Kahlua did was, I love food, especially like ice cream type food, or just it's the texture, I don't know. And the Kahlua did all that. I could drink, get that texture and that taste in my throat, and get drunk. And so that didn't work, because I would just drink enough to get really drunk. And then, of course, what would happen every now and then, I would end up drinking something and going all the way into the blackout behavior and, you know, shame. And there's so many nights that even at the end, when I was trying to go to sleep, there'd be so many things, of all the things that I did to the people in my life, that would go through my head before I could go to sleep, that sometimes it was hours before I could get to sleep, even if I'd been drinking a lot. Now, what happened also in the 1980s, I met another woman, this one younger than me, and she had, what she brought to the table was methamphetamines. I know. And I did the methamphetamines, you know, the outside issues for 10 years, along with the drinking. And the nights that I did both, you know, I was doing both, that's when I really got into trouble. You know, end up in jail or, you know, whatever. Ended up out where I don't know. Where am I? I don't know. Who cares? Let's just do another line, have another drink. Okay. And so what happened in the fall or the Christmas time around of 89, I started getting a problem with vertigo. Started having vertigo just all the time. Didn't know what that was. Didn't know what it was about. And so my last drunk was, so during that time, I was doing a lot of 2-3 weeks at a time, just having 2 or 3 drinks a day. And I thought I had it. Well, every now and then, I'd wake up on Saturday, and I'd start drinking, like about 8 in the morning, and then drink till Tuesday. And that's what happened. It was invariable. It would always happen. And then I would, oh, man, that's bad, that's bad. Okay, go 2 to 3 more weeks of just having a couple drinks every day. Well, the last one that I did was woke up Saturday morning, started drinking, woke up, and then I did not wake up this time until Tuesday morning, and I was really sick.
sick. The vertigo was gone. The just everything. It was just bad. And I was soul sick. I was soul sick that morning. And that morning when I woke up, I knew that I could not drink again. I just knew that. And one of the reasons why I knew that was my dad had already started getting sober, and his mom was sober, my grandma, and she ran 12-step houses and the whole bit. I didn't pay too much attention. He took me to a meeting one time, and it was South Bay Alano Club, so it was full of cigarettes and coffee and old people. I mean, you look at me now, I still think I'm not an old people, but I'm one of them now. So somehow I knew the information about the first drink. I knew that part. And that was the morning I woke up and knew, to me, the first step is in two parts. That's how it worked for me. The first part was I was powerless over alcohol. That's the morning I knew it. I knew it. So what happened over the next few months was I started finding out what the ear problem was. I had an ear problem, an inner ear problem. That's where the vertigo came from. So today, I'm eternally grateful that that happened, because that was the straw that broke the camel's back and got me sober. And when I shared that at the Meneer Support Group, which is the name of what I have, everybody said, "What? You're grateful that you have Meneers?" Oh, yeah, because I got sober and started getting healthier and better, and my soul sickness was going away. So grateful for that. But over that summer, the doctor gave me jars of 10 milligram Valiums, which I was, I was an alcohol meth guy. I didn't like those stuff until I started taking them. Oh, okay. So, and then on that Christmas Eve of 90, which would be, my sobriety date is 1-1-90, I told myself I'm going to have 1 ounce of champagne. And I was with all my friends who were still drinking, and we were at somebody's house. And so I put, and the jar, the glasses that she had, we were at her house, that woman's house, was the mason jars. That's what we used as glasses. And so there was, I could put an ounce in, and I drank that. And when that happened, it was amazing what happened to me at that moment. Was all that rage came up. I didn't actually talk about that rage, but there's a lot of rage involved the last few years too. All that rage came out. All that self-pity came out. All my friends are still drinking. How come they can do it and I can't? And it was just a really bad 1 ounce. 1 ounce of champagne. Who would have thought? But I was at that point. So that part for me was, I knew I was powerless over alcohol. So then what happened, I didn't go to AA, and I don't know how, and sometimes it was every second. I knew the one day at a time thing. So for me, it was sometimes it was every 1 second at a time. Okay? And I don't know how I held on. And then in November, a friend calls me up, and he goes, "Hey, John, I went to an AA meeting last night." "Well, next time you go, call me up and I'll go with you." He goes, "Well, I'm going to one in an hour." I didn't know it was going to be that soon. I figured it would be like in a month or something. So I went with him. And it was a young, I can't remember, it was Wednesday night at Porter Hall. And they asked me to share that night. And I'd just been to my folks. See, here's the timeline. So back in 79, when my youngest brother was 20, he had a son. And the mother was a 16-year-old girl. And this was a whole drama thing with the family. I was still living at home then. But my nephew was 2 months old, my brother was in a drunken stupor and crashed his car and he died. Yeah. So what happened is my mom adopted my nephew, so now he's my nephew and he's my brother. Okay. And we worked that out later when he grew up. We decided that it'd be uncle and nephew. But so why did I? How did I remember that? Why? Anyway, so okay. So what happened was that in the fall or the winter of 91, I went to that meeting, and I'd just gone to my parents' house, who at the time they were living in Brawley, and I spent the night there and gave my nephew his Christmas present, and I was impressed because he opens up and he's just joyful, he's just living in the moment, and he goes running down the hallway, and I hear him go bam, and he crashes against the wall and down on the floor, and he's going he's just so happy, but he stubbed his toe on the wall and ripped his whole toenail off. And that's the joy. I mean, it was just amazing. So that's what I shared that night. That was the only thing that I could think that was that living in the moment stuff. And that was, yeah. So what was going on for me at that time was the second part of the first step. Was my life was really becoming unmanageable. I was always angry, a lot of rage. I was always feeling sorry for myself. I was just miserable. And what I consider to be one of my character defects is I'll be damned if anybody's going to take care of me. So I never lost my job. Because that was always a fright. That's what, to be quite honest, that's what the outside issues helped me to always make sure I got up in the morning and go to work. So I was, but it was getting to a point where at work I was causing so much trouble because of my rage and my self-pity, you know, the victimhood that I had just wreaked havoc. So finally I'm at one of my Monday night meetings. And I'm looking at, you know, like, oh, they're not up there tonight. The steps, I'm looking at the steps, I just kept looking at them week after week after week after week, meeting after meeting after meeting. There's no way that could make a change in the way I feel about myself. No way. But I got so burned out, so broken down after I quit drinking, which is, you know, alcoholism, you can treat alcoholism one of three ways. You drink, which is what most of us did for a long time. You white knuckle it, which is what I was doing at that time, or you get recovery. Okay? Well, I was doing the white knuckling. No idea that that's what it was. I had no idea that's what all that was. I learned all these things later. And it's me. And so this stuff fits so much that it's me. So I finally got in front of the room and broke down and said, okay, I see all you guys happy. I see you all laughing. I see you all moving on with your life. I upstairs, you got to go to a step study. And that pissed me off. So but 3 months later, I finally, you know, asked a man to be my sponsor and started a step study. And I swear, within, I don't know, maybe 2 months, it all of a sudden occurred to me that I went 2 days. I just went 2 days in a row without thinking about drinking or without being angry at somebody. I just went, holy smokes. That's when I jumped in with both feet. And for me, what jumping in with both feet is, you know, doing the meetings, working the steps, living the life that's in this book, you know, reading the promises and those things. It's just amazing how that stuff has come so alive for me. Recovery is the place where it's at, and I love coming here. You know, I have a lot of friends in here. Some that I drank with, and now we're sober together, and that's really great. My brother, a lot of you know my brother, and he's, I don't know, 9 months now? Is that? He's got 9 months now, and he's a guy, the third brother, never died. He spent all his time when he was young in prison. He actually did hard time. I mean, we're talking Quentin and the whole bit. And so back when we were using and drinking, we had totally different lifestyles, so we had really nothing to do with each other back then. Today, that's not the case. Today, we're both about wanting to be recovered, wanting to not live the life that we lived all those years, and we've built a relationship together because of this program. One is because I got sober and no longer blamed anybody for anything that happened to me. Well, no, that's not totally true. I still like to do that. Anytime you hear me say never ever, just act as though that's not what I really said. Okay. So it's about building relationship. It's about building community. It's about helping others. It's about being helped, being open to be helped. And somewhere in there, in my first 4 years, I was at a meeting and I met the woman who later turned into, she's my wife now, and in January it'll be 14 years that we've been married. So, and she's really great. She treats me well. That's a whole other story. But, so today, you know, my story to me, my nephew. Forgot about my nephew. Okay, so when he was about 20, he started drinking. Do I want to say this? If I'm asking, I probably don't want to. So he started drinking and using, and when he was 24, he OD'd a couple of times. And the third time, he died. And this was just like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And so, you know, my family, I have a whole family. I brought 2 of my cousins in for a while, and now they're back out. I mean, they're like way, you remember, they're way out there. And they all have kids, and it's heartbreaking for me. And the part that I've learned for myself is I am extremely grateful for all that stuff that I went through. You know, all the being, not wanting to be noticed, and then when I started drinking, all the shame, all the embarrassment, all the sickness that I got, all the people I hurt, the amount of times I was hurt, I am grateful for that. I have a lot of gratitude for that, because without that, I wouldn't be at the spot that I'm at today. And this is a place where I really want to be. This is the man that I always wanted to be when I was growing up. And back in those early days, I just put everything on hold. And I put everything on hold until I was into my mid-40s. And the drinking helped me hold it for longer. In this room, there's a lot of faces in here I know. I'm working, a couple years ago, a man started working where I work. I've been there for 30 years, and there'd never been another recovered person in there. Today, there's a man in there who's recovered, and he's here tonight. He came tonight. He always goes to South Bay Pioneers, but when he knew I was coming to speak, he came to see me. There's other people in my life, when they heard that I was going to speak, they're here tonight. You know, uproot their Saturday night to come and be here and support me. And there's a lot of people in here that have been in this thing since the day I got here. And that's just amazing. And I just I can cry a lot. And one of the things that really makes me cry is the relationship I have with my brother. It's just amazing. It was so bad. I mean, when we were kids, we used to wrestle. And of course, I was older and bigger and always pretty heavy. And he would never say uncle. And I would try really hard. And that's one of the things when I did my amends, that's one of the ones I made to him was over that. You know, way before any of us ever started drinking or anything. Today, my 10th step to me is one of the most important. You know, 10, 11, and 12 are all good. But 10 for me is because I know immediately here, immediately when I've done somebody wrong, I know it instantaneous. And if I can't go to that person right then, it just bothers me until I can. And so one of the things that a man has taught me this thing about, so what I don't like to do is say that thing to that person. or to treat that person that way, so that I don't have to, you know, come back to them and apologize. Although I've noticed that it seems like when I go back to somebody and say, oh, you know, I did you wrong, however I say it, and then I always end it with, and that's not the way I want to be anymore. My relationship with that person actually gets stronger. It always somehow seems to get stronger. So one of the things that I don't want to do is make that first, you know, have that first thing come out. And so this guy taught me it's stop, think, choose, act. It just last night my wife and I went out with her daughter and her husband for Gail's birthday's tomorrow. So last night we went out last night, and we get in the car and she goes, "So do you know how to get there?" And I go, "Yes." And she tells me how to get there. She proceeds. So I could see myself. So I did the stop and I did the think, and I thought of all kinds of things. I thought of all kinds of things I could say and do to her to make her feel bad. And the only thing that I could think of to make her feel good was to say thank you. And so I said thank you. And that's something that I hadn't been doing that much lately. And the fact that I started a step study, I have a lot of New Year's Eves and New Year's Day stories. We're not going to go into it, but the one that I like is New Year's Day of this year, I started a step study. It was my 17th birthday. It was the first day of the year, and they were on step one. I can't think of anything better I want to be doing. And it's great. I've been at that step study, except when I'm out of town. No, I've been there every week. I really like it. It's really strong. And my new sponsor is from that meeting. And there's a lot of things I'm doing right now, but at the middle of December, I'm going to be done doing all those things, and I'm going to work the steps with them again. And it's been a little while since I've worked them. So for me, alcoholism is about death. And death of lives, death of soul, death of spirit, death of whatever you want to call it. And today, I'm choosing life. I choose life, and I choose life that this book right here has taught me, and the people in this room and other rooms have taught me. So with that, I thank you. And do you want to hear a joke? I know a couple of people wanted me to do it right off the beginning, and they didn't know my story wasn't going to be boring yet or not. Okay, so this lady goes into the pet store, and she walks by this parrot, and the parrot goes, "Ah, you're ugly, effing ugly." Let's imagine that's where it is in there every time. Oh, she got up, she gets all offended, and she goes to the clerk and says, "That bird just told me I was ugly. Okay, I'll take care of it." Next day she comes in, walks by the parrot goes, "Ah, you're fucking ugly." I know. Oh, well. I know. Oh, she goes up to the clerk. "I thought we talked about this." "Oh, yeah, okay, we'll take care of it." So the third day she comes in, walks by the parrot, and the parrot goes, "How am I going to say this? Thank you." "Ah, you're ugly." Oh, so then she gets really pissed. She just said, "That's it. I can't handle it anymore. I want to know, where's the owner? Okay, I'll go get him." He comes out of the back room. "Look, I'm an important lady in this town, and this bird's been offending me, and I can have you closed down for good." "Oh, no, don't worry. I'll talk to him this time." Okay, great. So a couple days later, the lady comes in the store, and she walks around the far side, and the whole time, the parrot's just watching her. She walks by. She goes around the other side. She comes by. And the third time she comes by, she stops and she goes, "What?" She goes, "Bob, you know."